Higher Human Performance, Episode 281. Today, it's about evidence-based leadership. The only fair way to lead. Higher Human Performance, the podcast. It's about leadership, and we'll do it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. Higher Human Performance is the website and the podcast. HigherHumanPerformance.com is where you can find all of the notes related to today's episode. Just visit the website, plug in the number 281 in the search this website box, and it will take you right to today's show notes. I've subtitled the show, The Only Fair Way to Lead, because I think it's fair for you, the leader, and I think it's also fair for your team. And I want you to be fair to both. I want you to be fair to yourself and your team. Any leader who won't face their own reality is going to find it tough to face the reality of those that they hope to lead and serve. And so I just think everybody is made better by dealing with how things really are. I'm pained when I see a leader struggle in their own quality of professional life issues that could be helped, could be improved, if they would just open themselves up to the possibility of leadership growth. And you would think that every leader would do that, but they don't. They clearly don't. I mean, unfortunately, there are too many leaders that have a worldview that is destructive, and it is seemingly just formed in cement and can't be changed. There are leaders that are driven by paranoia, fear, insecurity. And many of us as leaders, we just can't seem to get out of our own way. And unfortunately, there are some leaders who just refuse to consider a better way. We get stuck in some bad habits that we think might be serving us, but really they're killing us, and they're making our lives and all the people that we hope to serve, they're making us all miserable. And I have never wanted such a life, certainly not for myself or for anybody else, especially anybody that I am privileged to call a client. No, I want you to soar as a leader. I want your team to thrive under your leadership. And I want you to feel wonderful about the service that you provide to your team. I'll tell you the word. You know the word I like? Joy. Joy. That's what I want for you. I want you to have the joy of serving others. I want you to have the joy of personal and professional growth, the joy of seeing your people grow under your watchful care and concern. But first, let me give you a little bit of history. I'm a fan of scholar authors Jeffrey Pfeiffer and Bob Sutton. By the time their book was published in 2006, Hard Facts, Dangerous Half-Truths and Total Nonsense, subtitled Profiting from Evidence-Based Management, by that point, I had well over two decades of experience in working hard to make sure that I was seeing and hearing things correctly based on evidence. So let's start by talking a little bit about jumping to conclusions. Now, I first learned it without knowing what to call it, this whole evidence-based stuff. I had never heard until I picked up Pfeiffer and Sutton's book, Evidence-Based Management. I'm not going to tell you that I was all that familiar with that terminology, because for me, it was just seeing reality instead of practicing knee-jerk leadership. Early in my career, I worked for a guy who practiced anything but evidence-based leadership. His behavior drove employees crazy. And over time, I noticed that it mostly drove a particular kind of employee crazy, the top performers. The owner, he was one of the first people I ever worked for. And I would later learn through experience that he was among the large group of business owners and leaders who practiced management without evidence. He'd make purchasing decisions on how he felt things ought to be and ought to sell rather than on what actually was selling. He would make determinations about people based on how well he liked them instead of how well they were performing. Everything seemed to be really more feeling-based or emotion-based than evidence-based, and it drove us crazy. Well, like I said, it drove those of us who were performing at high levels, it drove us completely bonkers. And I saw it happen time and time and time again. People would be highly regarded by the owner in spite of compelling evidence that these were just not very good employees. And other people would be lesser regarded in spite of the evidence to the contrary that they were performing at high levels. And so life in business taught me over time, as I began to work for more people, this is a fairly common malady, partly because it's hard to resist. Most of us get this first impression based on appearance, demeanor, speech, you know, whatever else we're observing in this person. And we make some assumptions about this person. And these observations and these assumptions, they're not necessarily evidence, though. It doesn't matter. We still draw conclusions. We peg people. We peg situations. Not always correctly. I was once introduced to two people. One was a manager, one was not. And this was just a real brief introduction that was made to me in passing. Well, about a week or so goes by, and I find myself in a business meeting involving both of these people that I had just briefly, very briefly, been introduced to. And the meeting is clipping along, and suddenly I'm smacked with my own idiocy in the middle of this meeting, because it turns out that the person that I thought was introduced to me as the manager was not the manager. And in that brief introduction that I had been given to these two people, I not only got their names mixed up, but I also got their roles mixed up. And so for more than half an hour during this meeting, I'm looking at them based on that wrong conclusion, that wrong assumption. Now, thankfully, I just sat passively. I was just listening. I wasn't really participating. And I didn't address either one of them, didn't discuss anything that would give away my stupidity. But I do remember sitting there thinking, wait a minute. He's not the manager. Yeah, he is. I had it wrong. Getting it right changed everything. And that's the point. Getting it wrong versus getting it right changes everything. Now, part of my inclination toward evidence-based leadership, and I'll go so far as to let's include evidence-based management. And this happened for me very early in my career, in my 20s, because I am an intuitive kind of guy, and I'm really high in empathy. And for those of you that are into Myers-Briggs stuff, I'm an INFJ. So the intuition is really high. And it sounds bragging, but I'm going to say it anyway. Often really right. The problem is when it's wrong, it can be really wrong. And I learned early on that because I am so intuitive, I really need to lean on evidence to back up my intuition or to prove my intuition wrong. In other words, for me, evidence served as a real kind of a counterbalance to intuition to either prove or disprove my intuition. So I instinctively just kind of gravitated that way, probably driven in large part to wanting to make sure that I got it right. Because if you know anything about INFJ kind of people, we're dot connectors. We're looking to make sense of things. And I wanted to make sure that the sense I was making of things, that it was right. Jumping to a conclusion implies a quickness that doesn't always serve us. Hence the word jumping. We have to reach conclusions. Every day in your enterprise, you have to reach conclusions. That's not necessarily a bad thing, provided that we've got some evidence from which to draw our conclusion. It's that jumping part. That's the part that can kill us. Because we sometimes fail to hear properly. We sometimes fail to see properly. Just like me being introduced very briefly to these two people, and I got their names backwards and I got their role backwards because it was just such a quick introduction. But then there's this whole discernment problem. Sometimes we just don't see things clearly, or we don't hear them clearly. How else can you explain multiple witnesses giving completely contradictory accounts of the same event? I mean, it's like they saw or they heard something completely different. No, they just each had their own head trash and perceptions or lack of. They saw it differently. Now, sadly, it's not a case of somebody being right or somebody being wrong. Well, not necessarily. When it comes to evidence-based leadership, sometimes we all just flat get it wrong. Why do we do what we do? Why do we think what we think? What's the evidence upon which we base our assumptions or our conclusions or even our worldview? Evidence isn't truth, but evidence leads to truth. Now, there's a difference between evidence and truth. Hopefully, evidence leads us to truth. But like any kind of data, evidence is subject to interpretation. The important thing is to be open enough to see and to hear the evidence clearly so you can follow it where it leads you. Now, great leaders need to be led by evidence. And as I told you, speaking as a very intuitive person, this INFJ kind of person that I am, and having this strong empathy, I think it probably does explain to you why it's so important to me in my own leadership. And it may explain why it's so urgent for me personally in helping others. Because given my levels of intuition, I want to make sure I'm getting it as right as possible. And so I'm always looking for confirmation or denial. I'll take either one. I want to know if my intuition is valid or not. And getting it right is far more important than feeling or believing it's right. No, I want proof. Now, when I began my career, computers, well, they were nowhere to be found inside small business, or even large ones, except maybe super large ones. Cash registers, tabulating machines, we call them adding machines. They were just mechanical machines. That really was the extent of our high-tech world in the mid to late 70s. I mean, we didn't even have fax machines. Sort through the data, and it was just cumbersome. It was cumbersome. It was laborious. And bean counters, they were so named because, well, you know, come on, they were these stodgy personalities that were disposed to hole up in a room with only their colored pencils and their journals, and they would dive deep into the numbers, and they'd let the rest of us, you know, those of us that were just mere mortals in dealing with numbers, they'd let us know which end was up. Mainly, they'd let us know either how far in the red we were or if we were in the black, and how far in the black we were. Yeah, it's not good when you're looking for somebody to let you know which end is up if you realize both ends are down. No, I mean, back then, man, data was hard to come by. Gut feel was highly regarded, especially if the gut had a winning record. Okay, but things changed. Things began to change. Data began to be easier to collect. And pretty soon, we had bigger issues than no data or a lack of data. No, we had computers. And not only did we have computers, we had small computers. We had desktop computers. And we were overrun with data. And an avalanche of data came sweeping our way daily, weekly, monthly. Pretty soon, we had it pouring over the falls hourly. Because now we had real time. We had a real time analysis and data that was shot to our headquarters from every remote location where our companies were worldwide. Today, we are in a zero latency data. There's no delay at all. We have this zero latency data environment, and it's terrific, but it's also challenging at the same time. Now, while the authors of this book, They focus on evidence-based management. I'm concentrating on evidence-based leadership. And if you've listened to me any length of time at all, then you know I make a distinction. We manage work. We lead people. That's the distinction I make. Well, the authors, they begin the book talking about corporate acquisitions and how the majority of these acquisitions fail. And there are reasons, evidence, why this is so. And they cite in the book the success of Cisco. Cisco seems to have a pretty good knack for incorporating new acquisitions and teams into their culture with far greater success than normal because Cisco leaders use evidence. And unlike a lot of businesses, Cisco executives, they don't rely on hope. They don't rely on fear. They don't rely on paranoia or anything else. No, they go where the evidence leads them, and guess what? It works. Here's what the authors write. I'm quoting, "If doctors practiced medicine the way many companies practice management, there would be far more sick and dead patients, and many more doctors would be in jail." People make decisions. People dream up new ideas. People fix problems and often create them. People get work done or fail to. In short, it's people. It's people who have the power to think and people who have the power to work. That's the trump card, provided people are thinking correctly. And that's where evidence-based leadership has a huge impact. Have you ever heard a successful person interviewed and the interviewer hoping maybe to draw out some secret strategy about why this person made a particular decision? They get the answer that they never saw coming. You know, maybe it's a rock star or some performer who made it big, and the interviewer is just hoping for some insight. And so they'll ask the question, you know, well, what was the strategy to go to Nashville? And the artist might say something like, well, we weren't headed to Nashville. You know, we were headed for Los Angeles, but we ran out of money, and our drummer, well, he had a brother in Nashville where we knew we could crash until we earned some money. And you kind of smack your forehead and you're thinking, well, there wasn't anything strategic about that. I mean, they ran out of money and they needed a place to crash, and Nashville was closer than LA from where they were headed. Hello, Nashville. But we're trying to replicate their success, and so we want to dissect their strategy, and we're examining this story, and we're drawing some conclusions until we find out we're wrong. We're thinking that this was all strategic. They went to Nashville, and there was some purpose behind it. No, they were just on the road running out of money and had to have a place to crash for a few days or weeks. And so it goes. So it goes with how we sometimes operate in our organizations and, frankly, in our careers. We give meaning to things that really don't have any meaning. And we overlook other things that seem to have no meaning, but they might mean everything. It's a copycat world. More than ever before, it's a copycat world. Chinese manufacturing today has enabled the resourceful person to knock off just about anything. Now, I'm not saying it's legal. I'm just saying it's possible. And it's happening every minute of every day. It doesn't matter if it's a handbag. It doesn't matter if it's fashion products. It doesn't matter if it's a high-tech toy. Somebody has a factory in China who can crank these things out for you. Why do all the engineering when all we have to do is buy one, tear it apart, or send it overseas and have them reverse engineer it? Welcome to the world where generic is beneficial. All that R&D expense saved, all those man hours of engineering saved, all that time vetting all the proper components that we need to make this thing saved, not to mention all that wasted time being creative. Who needs that? Now, we have migrated away from the notion that reinventing the wheel isn't just unnecessary. It's stupid. In fact, don't even improve the wheel or put your own design on it. Just copy it outright. I mean, that way you only copy what works because you're only copying what's selling. You're never stuck with a dog because we're not going to copy a dog. What was once benchmarking is now copying. We just gave it a fancy name. That's right. Benchmarking. Well, it's just copying. Judging books and people by their cover is standard fare today. And that's why bloggers and podcasters, at least the ones who clamor for more readers and more listeners, they spend extraordinary amounts of time writing headlines and show titles. I should follow the evidence. Yes, I should. I absolutely should follow the evidence and do a better job of this myself. But I don't. I do care about attracting more listeners, but I clearly have not cared enough. Clickbait is the practice of luring web surfers to click a link by use of crafty copywriting or some other tactic. And sometimes we get what we thought we'd get, right? We click on a link because that title captivates us. And sometimes, okay, yeah, that's what we thought it was. But very much of the time, no, it's not what I thought it was. Fooled again. Now, the authors of this book, they point out how copycat-like we are, even in police work. They report that only 4 out of over 19,000 legal jurisdictions at the time of the book was published in 2006, only 4 out of over 19,000 legal jurisdictions had implemented an evidence-based practice of using sequential lineups instead of what then was commonly practiced, this six-pack approach, where a person would be put behind some two-way mirror and 6 people would be lined up in a row. About 75% of all the convictions, these writers say, 75% of all the convictions overturned by contrary DNA evidence resulted from eyewitness testimony given by people who viewed a six-pack lineup. But there's comfort in copying. I mean, because at least if we're wrong, okay, well, everybody else is too. I mean, if you are one of the 19,000 legal jurisdictions in 2006 who practiced this craft, if you've got it wrong, so does everybody else. Misery loves company and all that. Well, misery and misinformation love company. Now, thankfully, you'll likely find law enforcement agencies now practice sequential identification where a witness looks at one person at a time because collective wisdom finally caught up with the evidence. Took a long time, but better late than never. Sometimes evidence takes a while to be seen as valid, especially when everybody else is going in the same direction, even if that direction is against the evidence. Years ago, corporate America would purchase IT services and products from IBM because, well, it was always the safest choice. Executives would not be reprimanded for going with IBM even if things went south. How can you get that wrong? How can you get in trouble with your boss if you signed a PO to IBM? It's IBM. I mean, it was the no-risk option, even if there were other suppliers that might have proven to be better suited. That's how it goes with actions that go contrary to the evidence. Sometimes we just go with the safe bet, and sometimes the safe bet is to copy what everybody else is doing. Let's just go in the same direction everybody else is going. Now, I want to simplify some things here. Peter Drucker was asked why managers fall for bad advice and sometimes they fail to use sound evidence. And here's what he said, quote, "Thinking is very hard work and management fashions are a wonderful substitute for thinking." Boy, did he get that right. Blind spots, biases, prejudices, assumptions, preceptions, perceptions, perspectives, and a host of other things. They cloud our view. They impair our hearing and our seeing because we often hear what we want to hear. We see what we want. And then we cram in data to make it fit. Square peg or not, doesn't matter. Sometimes we just don't care because we've got a round hole that needs to be filled. So grab a bigger hammer, make it fit. He's right. Drucker was right. It's hard work to think. Harder still to see the evidence clearly. And still harder, I think, to follow the evidence until we get closer to the truth. If it's your murder being investigated, if it's the murder of someone you love being investigated, you want a relentless bloodhound of a homicide detective leading the way. You don't want someone that's just going to gloss it over and draw some quick conclusion. No. You want a detective that is going to chase the evidence until he finds the truth. Or at least get as close as humanly possible to the truth. That's what you want. You want answers, and you want the answers to be truthful. Leaders owe their people, and frankly, I think as a leader, you owe it to yourself, that same kind of a commitment. Okay, maybe you're not solving a crime, but you are an investigator. You're searching for the most accurate evidence that you can find because your decisions hinge on it. Your choices, they're going to be made based on it. Careers are going to be elevated or knocked down because of it. And if not evidence, then my question is what? What? Intuition? The rumor mill? What other people claim to have been told by somebody? I mean, there's so many things in life that don't work. But still we seem to put in the work. I mean, kids drop out of school and we think truancy rules work. No, they don't. No, they don't. We often fix problems by creating new problems, all for a lack of thoughtful consideration in gathering evidence and following it toward the truth. A young woman, she pipes up in a meeting. She says something that we deem a tad inappropriate and we castigate her forever. Why? Well, she's uncouth. She's unprofessional. Maybe. But maybe she just didn't properly read the situation one time. I mean, maybe nobody else in the room saw it like we did. And what may appear bad at first glance, maybe it's completely innocent on further examination. Yeah, but you know, that would take too much time and that would take too much effort. It's hard work to think. It's just easier to jump to a conclusion, the conclusion that first hits us. And now we can peg her forever, more as somebody unworthy of our executive team. She may be the brightest bulb in the room, but she may not be the most socially savvy. I don't know. I need more evidence. Here's some tips. Let me give you some tips to help you. It's not a comprehensive list, but it'll get you started. And I'm going to encourage you, yeah, you, to think of your own steps. And I want you to ponder what actions you can take to improve your own evidence-based leadership. I want you to commit to it. Clearly, I do. But I want you to see the advantage of it. Step number one, know yourself. Know yourself. Okay, I've already confessed. I know I'm an INFJ. I also know that I'm high on empathy. There are many things that I know about myself thanks to years of living with myself and being critical with myself. And also, thanks to the input of others, especially a woman that I've been married to for 30 years. When in doubt, ask other people how they see you. It may not mean that they're correct, but if everybody tells you the same thing, okay, you probably would be kind of foolish to just discount it. Every leader, well, let's throw in investigators here too, because it's true of them as well. Every leader has tendencies and views that have to be taken into account. Women see things differently than men. A shocker, I know. As a result, our interaction with other people, it might be curved toward our view. Knowing that and acknowledging that, that helps us gather and vet information and evidence. As a coach and a consultant, I have a mandate that I live by, and it's much like a doctor. Do no harm. Do no harm. I clearly stole it from the medical profession because it fits. The last thing I want to do is harm somebody or hurt their career. Now, that doesn't mean that I make sure to tell people what they most want to hear or that I pander to clients who have behaviors that are clearly contrary to accelerating their career. No, I'll speak the truth that I've witnessed, but I'm committed to making sure I've got it right. When I get it wrong, and yeah, it happens, I want to be quick to own it and to make it right. And it happens. Listen, it happens weekly. But I'm very quick to apologize and to make it right when I do have it wrong. It's just how I choose to live. these aren't difficult concepts. These aren't difficult practices for me. I embrace them because they fit what I value the most. And what I value the most is kind of the business moniker that I live by. Always be honest, be competent, give more, make it right. It's just how I choose to roll. Now, you can choose your own way to roll, but that's my choice. As a leader, the do no harm mandate for me is a wise choice. I think it's a wise choice for any leader. Knowing yourself and controlling yourself gives you the best opportunity to avoid doing harm to others and to yourself. I mean, there have been times that I got it wrong and I made it right, but harm was still done. It's regrettable, but until I can be perfect, it's life. Yes, I have wronged people, and yes, people have wronged me. But when people own their actions, I can pretty easily forgive, and I'm hopeful that they can easily forgive me too. That's what I hope happens. That's what I want to happen. So part of knowing yourself is knowing where you'd like to err. Where do you want to get it wrong? Do you want to get it wrong in jumping to the wrong conclusion where harm might happen? Or do you want to get it wrong in jumping to the wrong conclusion where grace might be extended? I mean, think about this now. This is serious stuff. An employee who neglects to perform some specified task. They might be guilty of neglect. We could jump to that conclusion, but we don't have any evidence at this point. Or they might have a valid excuse or a valid reason. We could jump to the conclusion they're negligent and we're all over them. Man, we are all over them. Feel better? You feel better for jumping all over them? Yeah, they were neglectful. What if you discovered that they were enduring some serious family challenge? Does that alter your view? It might. By foregoing the conclusion jump, you give not only the employee, but you give yourself the opportunity to get it right and to get it more right. By knowing yourself, you can decide which approach you're going to take. Which one are you going to take? You going to take the approach where you jump to the conclusion that could do harm, or are you going to jump to the conclusion that might give grace? You clearly know which one I'm encouraging you to take, the latter. Number two. Tip number two, know your team members. There are many, many reasons to love small teams, and there's empirical evidence that small teams work. Chief among these reasons is the ability to really know and to really understand people, every person on your team. Anonymity does not serve leaders well. If you're going to be a leader, you've got to give up being anonymous. You've got to give up having an anonymous team member because that isn't going to be helpful either. No, you need to know the people that you're leading, and they need to know you too. Be real. Stay real. Don't pretend. Okay, yes. Yes, you have multiple personas, but leave the masks in the closet for Halloween. Because personas are for situations. Think of them like clothing. You know, sometimes I wear a suit. Other times I wear jeans. Yeah, to work, to see clients. The circumstances dictate the choice. And whether I'm wearing a suit or jeans, it's still me. But the presentation or the persona, that's really the only thing that's changing. I mean, otherwise, I'd be flexing in and out of personality styles and vocabulary choices, and, well, people would likely be looking to have me committed to a mental health facility. The word I'm going to give you is congruency. Every leader must be congruent. Your people need to be able to accurately predict your behavior. The more predictable you can be, the better. Now, I know leaders that, you know, we want to throw curveballs and we want to be unpredictable. We want to keep people on edge. I'm not saying that tactically, strategically, there's a time and a place for that, because frankly, I believe that there is. But in the general course of your leadership, I just don't think that's a good way to roll day in, day out. Consistently unpredictable is not a good leadership model. The more predictable you can be, the better. I don't want you to undervalue this. And I don't want you to think, well, it's better to just keep them guessing. No, it's not better to keep people guessing. People need to understand. Just think about your own childhood. Did you want to come home or have dad or mom come home? You got no idea how they're going to be. No idea at all. They might be good. They might be bad. You just don't have a clue. I mean, it is Russian roulette every time you came home. No child thrives in growing up in a house like that. I tell you, the people that I've heard tell me horror stories of their childhood, kids of alcoholic parents. You just never knew when mom or dad were going to dive into the bottle and how it was going to be. I mean, it was Russian roulette at home all the time. That is not an environment that children thrive in. It's not an environment that your team members will thrive in. Your team members want to know where they fit, and they want to know that they matter. What's their story? You've got to give them their story. Do you want them to feel uneasy when they drive into work every day? You want them to be on edge every time they enter the office? Or would you rather they walk into the office confident that they matter? Confident that they know exactly what it is you want from them and what you expect of them and what you're going to hold them accountable for. You keep that uneasy team member, I'll take that confident team member every single time. And my confident team member will kick the butt of your always on edge worker every single time. You know, parents, we know our kids, and kids, well, they know the parents. My kids know me. I knew my parents. I mean, that's how it goes. And the more parents know their kids and the more kids know their parents, don't you think that's better for the whole family dynamic? Sure. Sure it is. Good parents have instilled training into their kids so much so that the kids know what mom and dad want, even if mom and dad haven't addressed that specific thing that the kid might be facing right now. I mean, as a parent, could you possibly catalog and put in a volume all of the possible problems and situations that your child will encounter when you're not with them? No, it'd be impossible. But when you were growing up, and when I was growing up, and hopefully the kids that are growing up today in our homes, we are training them in such a way that they know. They instinctively know, mom and dad wouldn't like this. Mom and dad wouldn't approve of this. Leadership in your organization works exactly the same way. Predictability doesn't mean that you're stagnant in lacking innovation. It doesn't mean that you're uncaring about creativity, nor does it mean that you're not devoted to changes leading toward improvement. It just means that your team knows what matters most to you. It means that they make the decisions that they think will please you. And if they do that and they suffer for it, well, pretty soon they're going to wonder what you want. They're not going to know what you want. And that's why you should put being congruent and consistent. Just put those two C's on your forehead, congruent and consistency, on a front burner for your leadership. Say what you mean what you say. Say what you mean what you say, and be consistent. Don't say one thing and do something else, because your team's going to be confused. And that congruency is going to slip. And pretty soon people are going to dread coming to work because they just can't predict how you're going to react, how you're going to behave, or what it is you want. Tip number 3, attract the facts. Attracting the facts is important work for leaders. And some leaders are surrounded by deaf mutes because only deaf mutes survive. And then they wonder, well, why nobody will tell us anything? Why didn't anybody talk to us? We never hear of anything. We're hearing about things after the fact. It's one thing to go gather facts, and anybody with sufficient resolve can do that. It just takes work. Attracting facts is a completely different skill set that you must develop. If you've become proficient at the first two steps that I gave you, then this step is going to be much easier. But you fail at either one of those, at knowing yourself and knowing your team, yeah, okay, I'm not going to give you a fighting chance at making this one happen. No, as a leader, you want other people willingly sharing facts with you. You want people to be proactive to share facts. The goal is to have the team, your team of people, be forthcoming. I'll give you two simple but powerful tips to accomplish this. One, be forthcoming with them. You cannot expect people to be forthcoming with you if you will not be forthcoming with them. And you've got to start the ball rolling. Be forthcoming without any expectation, without any conditions from your team. Number two, don't shoot the messenger. Don't be emotionally charged when people bring you facts that might disappoint you or news that you really would rather not hear. You're glad you heard it, but you hate to get it. No, be calm, not reactive. The more reactive you are, the more you're negatively reacting to things, then you're going to be negating your ability to attract facts. Think about this. Someone comes in and they've got bad news. Well, you need to hear it. But you react, maybe violently. Think about this messenger now. How attuned are they going to be in the future to come and bring such news to you next time? Much less so. It's just human behavior. So don't take it out on the messenger. And not only don't take it out on the messenger, but I'm going to tell you, take deep breaths, be calm, don't be reactive. Thoughtful. That's what people want in leadership. Sure, considerate as well. But thoughtful and considerate, they are not the same thing. Thoughtful means you consider things. It implies that you're careful in your thinking. You're not jumping to conclusions. You're not reactionary. You're taking the time to get it right. And everybody will respect that, even if they don't always understand it. Now, you're liable to have some knee-jerk employees, and they're going to encourage you to join hands and jump to the conclusions that they themselves have already reached. Okay, avoid that. Avoid that temptation. You have to be better. You have to hold to a higher standard. Show them the way. Show them the way toward evidence-based leadership by giving people a culture where presenting the facts is highly prized. Make sure people understand how highly you prize that. Attracting facts isn't the same as attracting complaints or rumors. An employee approaches you and they're going to tell you something that they've heard, and they're thinking that they're being very dutiful, right? They're anxious to tell you about this exchange that they had over lunch. And it seems that their lunch partner told the story of a manager who may be, he may be working employees without paying them the required overtime. Now, rather than listen passively, you begin to ask hard questions like, well, how does this person know this? And you follow that up with more specific questions, including searching for answers to, well, who talked to whom? You want to attract facts, not rumors. And this is going to accomplish two important things. Number one, it's going to signal that you're interested in facts. And number two, it signifies that you're not going to be a sounding board for rumors. And people need to have their facts when they present facts to you, not rumors. And if they don't, you don't want to attract nonsense. And if you don't follow that advice, you will attract nonsense. Because trust me, attracting nonsense is a whole lot easier than attracting facts and evidence. Sadly, too many leaders, they can hear something. Well, they just deem it a fact. They deem it as credible evidence just because they heard it. Somebody told somebody something and a leader swallows it, hook, line, and sinker. That is not evidence-based leadership. That's foolishness. I mean, did you hear them say it? A leader can ask a person who brings some rumor to them, well, did you hear them say that? Well, no, but Bob said Tom told him and Tom heard it. He heard it firsthand. Well, now, isn't this just peachy? So somebody go fetch Tom and let's see if we can figure out the facts. Rumor-based leadership is not nearly as effective or productive as evidence-based leadership. Seek the facts, attract the facts. Tip number four, accurately discern the facts. Sounds way easier than it really is. You have to take the time to ask the questions. And you have to pause and ask deeper questions. And sometimes you just have to pause. Let people fill the silence. It starts in your head. It starts in your head by questioning your questions. Is there a better question to ask? One that'll take you closer to the truth. Always remember, truth, that's the quest. Truth is the quest. You want to see things as they really are. Doesn't your team deserve that from you? Doesn't your career deserve that? Doesn't your leadership deserve that? The answer to all of the above is yes, 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 yes. Dig like a detective and keep digging. And if you need corroboration, then go get it. You know, President Ronald Reagan, he gave you the formula for evidence-based leadership. Trust, but verify. Don't lead by paranoia. Don't be cynical. Don't be untrusting. Just be guarded about forming conclusions. Base your conclusions on facts and evidence. Here's some questions you could ask yourself. What do I know to be true? Do I know for a fact what really happened? Do I know for a fact what was really said and what was meant? Who are my sources and how credible are they? Do I have evidence to prove the motive behind this? Where's the proof? Now, that's just to get you going. Keep adding to that list. Make up your own questions. Think. Do the hard work, as Drucker said, of thinking, and craft your own questions. Above all, stay the course. Tip number five, do not give in to shortcutting it. Sometimes you're going to be pressed for time and you're going to be tempted to shortcut it. Just this one time you'll knee jerk. Just this one time you'll jump to a conclusion. Now that's when you're going to get it wrong and you're going to undermine all the discipline and all of the hard work that you have put into being an evidence-based leader and to training your team that you are an evidence-based leader. And now all the congruency and all the consistency is going to go out the window. Just because this one time you thought you'd shortcut it. You want your team to do great work all the time, don't you? You want your team to do great work all the time, no matter what, don't you? Well, don't show them how willing you are to shortcut your own work, because that'll show them it's okay for them to shortcut their work. Well, every now and again, it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's never a good thing to intentionally, due to your own laziness and your own neglect, to get it wrong. Listen, sins of commission are better than sins of omission. Be caught doing the wrong thing because you were trying to get it right. Don't be caught doing nothing because you were lazy or afraid of getting it wrong. Now, this includes avoiding playing favorites. The best and the brightest often get it wrong. Just because you've got some team members who have proven reliable every other time does not mean that you should accept conjecture from them. No, you've got to keep holding them to the same high standards you do for yourself and everybody else. It doesn't mean that you've lost trust in them. It just means that you've got a process and that process is important to your leadership and you're unwilling to compromise it. You need to make it a non-negotiable standard for your leadership. Don't shortcut it. Let's talk a little bit as I wind down here about curiosity and vulnerability. These are two really vital ingredients, I think, to your leadership effectiveness, curiosity and vulnerability. Leaders, especially senior leaders, can be prone to arrogance, right? We can be prone to know-it-all syndrome because we've been around the block. This isn't our first rodeo. It may be our last, but it ain't our first, and we know a thing or two. And that whole smartest guy in the room thing, it can hit any of us, and we have to be on guard against it. Leaders don't have superpowers. We don't wear capes to work. We're not faster than a speeding train or a flying bullet. We're not as good as we think we are. But it's also likely that we're not as bad as we sometimes feel we are either. And so we need to accept the truth and the evidence that we're blessed. As leaders, we're blessed with an opportunity at this moment in time. And for this moment in time, you are the leader. You are the steward in charge of the organization or the department or the team. And responsibilities are a blessing and they are a burden. And you need to bear them with sobriety and with clear thinking. You need to own them for the time that you have them. Your power is a gift to share with your team and to help them do their work better. It's not a betrothal of superiority. You're not better than anybody else. You're not even necessarily smarter than anybody else. You simply have a role and a responsibility that has a wider and a broader reach than others. A bigger platform. And that bigger platform gives you authority to influence the direction and the work of other people. Use it wisely. Keep learning. Curiosity, that's what drives learning. Stop being curious, you're done. You're done. The smartest guys in the room are only interested in showing off, not learning. You need to avoid being that guy or gal. No, view the other person, whomever they are, as knowing something that you don't. Find out what it is. Find out what it is. Listen, you know what you know. Growth comes in learning what you don't know. And vulnerability, that's accepting failure. Maybe better yet, it's being open to failure, namely your own. You've got to be willing to be wrong. And then you've got to be willing to make it right. I regularly ask leaders a question about their leader. I don't know why. It's a matter of curiosity, I guess, for me, because it's kind of a barometer for me through the years that I have learned. I will ask a leader about their leader. Have they ever apologized to you? Simple enough question, you would think. And you'd think that everybody, wouldn't you? You'd think everybody has heard their leader apologize to them for something. Unless they've only worked for them, you know, for just maybe a brief period of time, then it's understandable that, okay, maybe they haven't, not yet. Evidence. Evidence, that's the answers that I get to that question. Evidence has shown me that far too many leaders have never apologized to their team for anything. And when I press, I'll ask, well, why do you think that is? And the common response that I get, I don't think they want to appear weak. Really? No, I don't think they want to appear weak. So I think that's why they don't apologize to us ever. Come on, people. Being human isn't being weak. It's being real. And frankly, everything else is just dishonest. That's vulnerability. Vulnerability is being honest with yourself, with your team, about yourself. Stop worrying about people thinking that you're all that and more. In fact, I would encourage you to not fret much at all about your image with your team. Instead, worry about how well you're serving your team. And that image, well, that image is going to be everything that you wanted and more if you'll do that. And when you're devoted to leading with evidence, you're going to start getting it right more often than not. And that alone may just shoot you and your reputation up into the stratosphere of extraordinary leadership and higher human performance. And that's what it's all about. Avoid hoarding knowledge, information, expertise. That's vulnerability. Be confident enough to share what you've learned. Pass it on. You spent years and years enduring many scars. You've got the scars to prove that you belong where you are. Well, you need to help other people avoid the potholes that have nearly broken your ankles. They're going to get their own scars. These are your people. Their success is your success. Show them the way. Lead them. I need to say, and I need to close, and I thought long and hard about this as I prepared for today's show. I need to end today's conversation, I think, about leadership growing pains and why these are exactly what you want. Any discussion about evidence-based leadership needs to include some consideration about personal individual growth of the leader who dares to embrace it. Because organizations change, they mature, personnel changes, chemistry, team chemistry, that changes. And if leadership remains in place for a prolonged period of time, well, they have the opportunity for growth and maturity alongside the entire organization. Here in Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys owner, Jerry Jones, he hired Jason Garrett to be the head coach, first as an interim in, I think it was November of 2010. Now, by January of the very next year, 2011, he was named the permanent head coach, and that's where he remains today. It's his first head coaching job in the NFL. And Jerry Jones has kept him in place. And as a result, Garrett has grown. He's learned. And it's very doubtful that he's working exactly the same today as he did 4 years ago. Not all that growth has been comfortable. Not all that growth has been easy. But it's clearly been profitable so far. And so it can go with you and your leadership and your organization. You can and you should learn. You want your team to grow. Every day you're asking your team to improve and do better. And so it's only fitting that you demand the same of yourself, isn't it? I've seen it happen very often, especially leaders willing to embrace change. Leaders who are vulnerable enough to adapt, leaders who are vulnerable enough and open enough to grow, they're going to experience some tension and they're going to experience some stress, growing pains. That's exactly what you're after. You want this pain because it means you're finding new levels in your own leadership performance. So don't take a bow just yet. Okay, this is a tough time that you're going to have to muscle through when you're going through this painful period because it's going to weigh you down. It's going to kick your butt if you're not careful. You're going to be tempted to avoid this pain by going back to how things used to be, back when you were totally comfortable. Because this uneasiness, it can devastate some leaders. Some even get physically sick. I've seen it. Facing the realities of these changes, especially if you're going to fully embrace evidence-based leadership, it can seem like a daunting task, and you're going to question whether it's going to be worth it. The answer is yes. Yes, it's going to be worth it. Keep pushing. Push past this pain because it's a sign that you're putting in the good work. It's no different than a person who has lived a sedentary lifestyle for a long time. And then they go to the gym and everything in their body aches. So they just want to be slathered in Bengay and jump in a hot tub maybe. They don't want to go back to the gym, but what's going to really cure the pain? Going back to the gym, keep putting in the work. Same thing here. Leaders brave enough to keep going, they find a path to organizational excellence that they wouldn't have found otherwise. Because here's what happens. I've seen it happen over and over again. Leaders, as they have been elevating the performance of their team and they've been urging their top performers to get to new heights, well, along the way, they have likely seen the gap between their bottom performers and their top performers close. They've lost some poor performers maybe along the way because, well, they just couldn't keep up. And some other poor performers have elevated their performance. Now, they're still the bottom performers, but their bottom is not as low as it was before. And now it's a different organization, right? Things have changed. The team has grown. You've grown as a leader with them. And now it's time to embrace the ultimate way to lead, evidence-based leadership. And you come to grips with the past. And sometimes you want to kick yourself because you're going to think, man, alive, I can't believe I didn't see this earlier. And you're going to think of all the past mistakes that you've made. And you're going to come to grips with who you really are and what you really are. And these things, sometimes they happen. Yeah, sometimes they happen at an appropriate time. Sometimes it's not an appropriate time, but it's a time when it's appropriate for you. It's a time when it's you're open to see it now. A time to accept these things, a time when you're most ready to implement these things. Because now is your time, and it can be a painful time. Your team is going to experience some bewilderment. Don't sweat that. You just need to go with it. Because you need to understand that it's just part of the necessary process. You keep doing what you've got to do to practice evidence-based leadership and management. It's not going to take long. Trust me. It won't take long. Your team is going to realize this is the new norm. This is now how he or she rolls. This is now how you roll, and they will adjust. And then they'll begin to mirror it in their own leadership and in their own work. And you know what? The results are going to amaze you. Promise you, the results are going to amaze you when you see people following your lead and performing at levels that they did not think was possible, because now it's all evidence-based. Fun. That's going to happen. Well, unless you're an ogre, it can't be stopped, because high performers doing great work, they have fun. And you can have fun too. Success and winning. That's what makes fun. When you're in the growing pain phase, you need to look past that and you need to envision this fun place, because that's where you're headed. If you'll just stay the course, that is where you're headed. Longer than normal, I know. But aren't you glad it was? Episode 281, he says confidently. Hey, as always, the podcast is brought to you by my company, Bula Network, LLC. Bula Network is a CEO and city government executive coaching company. That's right. Find out more about that by going to the website, higherhumanperformance.com. All kinds of ways to connect with me. I greatly appreciate your time and attention listening to the podcast. I hope that you'll share it with other leaders that you know. We try to make these things real world and applicable to your everyday business or organizational life. Higher Human Performance, the podcast. It's about leadership. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. I greatly appreciate your time and your attention. Greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.